You are now tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook. On this edition of PTR, we look at the current California crisis and see what it means politically and economically for the rest of the nation.
This is a fight for the future. On one hand is really the question of whether we're going to make California safe for global capital. And the other hand, the question is whether we're going to create a society based on cooperation and which benefits the citizens equally. We're not going to be able to go back to the old social contract. That's dead. The assembly line that produced that social contract has passed into history along with the mechanical cash register. They're never coming back. We're not going to be able to succeed here by fighting backwards. We're going to have to fight forward to a new future.
People's Tribune Radio is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League also publishes the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Ordering and contact information is available later on in the program. Oftentimes, the political actions which take place in California are later played out in the rest of the nation. Given the $30-plus billion deficit and a possible recall of Governor Gray Davis, California's politics are becoming highly publicized. Fortunately, I was able to sit down with writer of science and politics Steve Miller to make sense of the situation during an interview from his home. What's the main issue with this California crisis?
Everybody likes the drama and the circus atmosphere of the election here, but if you step back, you really look at what's going on, you'll see that the election in California is about the fate of the American dream. The specific question which is really being debated out behind all the carnival atmosphere and the media blitz is whether or not government is going to be held responsible for meeting the social needs of the people, or it's just going to be an agency of corporations. California has always kind of been associated with a utopian vision of the world. In fact, the name California comes from a 16th century Spanish novel, which was a utopian novel where they wrote about this land of California that was a utopia. It was before California was even discovered. And when it was discovered, they took the name from the book because of the beaches, the bounty, the pleasant weather, and just the abundance that the state has. California has, even in recent times, has really been seen as the land of abundance and the culmination of the American dream for the United States. It was the abundance of gold, the abundance of oranges. California is the place that the Okies went when life could no longer sustain them in the Midwest, in the Depression. And so California has always been the promise of abundance. At the same time, what everybody's recognizing now is that that abundance is being denied. California voters are the most dissatisfied in the nation, and they're just absolutely appalled at the social destruction that's sweeping the state. This is what lies behind the dissatisfaction with the governor.
What's the issue that triggered all of this crisis?
People in California are really angry with how the governor handled the electricity crisis of 2 years ago. In that time, as most people know, California's electrical system was just being looted by corporate raiders like Enron and George Bush's friend Kenneth Lay. And essentially what the governor did was he guaranteed the profits of these corporations in the context of the crisis. It just overrode the interests of the people of California. Consequently, in California today, we pay twice to three times the cost for electricity of any other state in the union. We also pay $2 a gallon for gas on a routine basis. And this is symptomatic of a bigger picture of just the disintegration of the fabric of what people used to accept as normal things that were just coming to them as part of what government's function was.
How is this crisis characterized by the actors involved?
Well, if you listen to the governor, he says that we're in a situation where California was just savaged by the electrical companies, and that Bush's friends have fleeced the state. That's not accurate. Davis, while he puts forward a liberal agenda, quote unquote, and talks about social issues. In fact, he's adopted a page from Clinton's book and stolen the Republican economic program, which is kind of a hidden agenda, but it's what operates behind the scenes. And he's made California exceedingly corporate-friendly. At the same time, he's been cutting back social programs like crazy. So it's not a conservative backlash against the liberal agenda, the way they characterize it. Schwarzenegger talks about California, the world's fifth largest economy, being in a economic death spiral and that businesses are fleeing the state. Well, in fact, California has bent over backwards in the last 30 years to make the state business friendly. If you listen to Rush Limbaugh, he says that the real problem is California spends too much for health care for the elderly. He's playing on the traditional conservative tactic of trying to get people angry over the fact that their money is being misspent. Most people think that California's money is spent for social programs, where in fact it's really spent to aid corporations. So the social destruction that we see is a direct result of three decades of policies to benefit corporations and to cut back on social programs. This is not unique to California. What we're seeing here is the next battle for the future of this country. It's either going to be that we continue social programs or that the government becomes just the open expression of corporations and their interests. We should also clarify here, when we say social programs, these are characterized often as money for welfare queens and drug addicts who don't accept personal responsibility. But in fact, when we talk about social programs, we're talking about public schools, programs to make the air clean, programs to make the water clean. California is just in the last 8 years, due to a gasoline additive, 70% of the wells in California have been polluted by a cancer-causing chemical, MTBE, that was put into the gas at the behest of the oil companies. So social programs are not just for individuals. They're for the maintenance of the community college system, the university system, the highways to keep the essentially only two major rivers in the entire state, to keep them free of pesticides so that the fish are not full of pesticides. These are the programs which are being attacked and being cut.
Many people are talking about the dot-com bust and its effect on its negative effect on our economy. How has this played a role in this process?
What we refer to here in California as the dot-com bust, which means that a lot of the startup electronic businesses that work in the telecommunications field, this is really just the local effect of a much larger world economic collapse, which is of the telecom systems around the world. In 1997, the World Trade Organization, in its first act, opened up the telecommunication systems of 94% of the world markets to investment capital. Previously, these were all constructed by nations from the taxes of the people, and they were held as public property. Now, these companies can invest in these, and we're talking about, in the aggregate, a $600 billion annual revenue, which is now being seized by international corporations to invest on the stock market, to withdraw. It's very similar to what happened to California in the electrical crisis. It's essentially international deregulation and international privatization. This is translated into just an orgy of looting and speculation based on this revenue, which then reached its end and caused a worldwide collapse, one expression of which was what we call here the dot-com bust. But if you step back and look at it, this whole maneuver was really perhaps the largest transfer of public wealth to private wealth in human history. And this is symptomatic of what's going on globally, and especially in the United States, and it's now really appearing very in sharp outline in California.
California is not the only state facing a budget deficit, and a lot of pressure is coming from the federal government. How is the federal government contributing to these state deficits?
The U.S. Council of Governors has stated last year that all the states are in the greatest crisis since the Depression. There's something like 36 states that are in deficit right now, and interestingly, states, unlike the federal government, have to balance their budget every year. This particular form of the crisis is a result of something that both Democrats and Republicans completely agree on, and that is a new approach to government, which was started with Clinton. What they've done and what Bush is raising to a higher level is that the federal government is pushing the responsibility for social programs onto state governments. A lot of times these are unfunded mandates and there's no money, but legally the states still have to guarantee that the programs exist. And the states then turn around and push it down onto the counties. It's not even news anymore when counties and cities start going bankrupt, and that's a result of the social programs being pushed on down the line.
So the cities and counties end up paying for what the state and the federal government can't?
The states are right now in the process of figuring out legally how to shove it down onto the counties. In California, that's done very directly, where the state just says, we're no longer in charge of these social programs. The counties have to handle it, and the counties themselves are bankrupt. So this is what's behind the economic crisis that's affecting virtually every state in the United States. Add into this that Bush himself has his own particular strategy, which is massive tax cuts for the rich, deficit spending, increasing the military budget something like 40% over what it was with Clinton, so that's now over $450 billion a year, and of course creating war, which costs the country something like $10 billion a week. Bush is the first president to ever have a war and not raise taxes. Lincoln started the income tax to pay for the Civil War. Even Ronald Reagan increased taxes to pay for war. Bush is also going to be the first president since Hoover to end his term with fewer people working in the United States than before. This is an aspect of what people are talking about, the jobless recovery. And this particularly plays out in California, where the traditional jobs of electronics, the information technology type jobs, are now being farmed out overseas and will never return. They openly state that these jobs will never return. Programmers in India, Ireland, the Caribbean, and other places where people speak English are just being given the jobs that people do here. Of course, they work for $1 an hour, $2 an hour, instead of $30 an hour. Behind Bush's maneuvers is a philosophy of government which actually started with Clinton, but which is really clearly articulated by Bush's handler, Karl Rove. Karl Rove is credited by many people as basically creating Bush, and he takes as his hero Mark Hanna. Mark Hanna was the political operative that created William McKinley at the end of the 1800s. He created McKinley first as the pontifical governor of Ohio and then as the elegant president that really was a president of empire and clearly articulated this. He was the president who said that we had to take over the Philippines. But both Rove and Mark Hanna's open political position is that the only business of government is business. Their game plan is basically to bankrupt government, because once it's bankrupt, then they can claim, as we hear every day, that the best solution is to privatize everything. I mean, how else are these guys going to get their hands on Social Security?
How is this game plan being played out in the United States?
In the United States, corporations now pay one-third of the taxes that they paid in 1980. So when they tell you that there's no money, this is the result of a carefully managed process. In California, where the situation is even more extreme, California's economy has doubled in size since 1980, but corporations still pay exactly the same amount of taxes as they did then. We're really seeing here a maneuver which is very similar to what goes on with countries like Argentina, Indonesia, India, where the World Bank forces a structural adjustment policy, which really means cutting social programs. They're maneuvering it in a different way, but that's what is the specific thing that's happening here. Globalization is coming ashore, and we're getting a preview here of what economic crisis is going to mean in the age of electronics.
You're listening to PTR, where we're talking with Steve Miller about the current California crisis. What is the budget crisis like in California?
Well, we have some specifics here that are also fueling the election. Many people know that California's budget came in like 45 days after it was legally had to, and this was the result of Prop 13. Prop 13, which was passed as a so-called conservative revolution in 1978, requires that the budget is passed by a two-thirds vote. What that really means is that a minority then can simply block any efforts to have a budget by refusing to vote. And in this particular year, what happened was that the Republicans simply refused to vote for any new taxes and just held the governor hostage to this process until he agreed to their terms. The result is that California has postponed most of the budget crisis for the next 7 years. In fact, the budget this year is the best we're going to see in the next 7 years because of how they've postponed billions of dollars that has to be cut. Interestingly enough, this is going to hit a year from now, right in the middle of the 2004 election. And in fact, one of the interesting things here is that the California governor's recall is really the opening shot of an 18-month electoral process, which is fascinating because when has an election really meant very much in the United States? Not really. Most people are very clear that the Democrats and the Republicans are pretty much the same thing. But now the social destruction of these policies to benefit corporations is really beginning to hit, and it's just absolutely fascinating that an election is now something that really means something.
Could you explain a little bit about the history of Prop 13?
People in California are really beginning to pay the price for Prop 13. Prop 13 was sold to people by Ronald Reagan as a moral issue, that you, the hardworking American person, should not have to pay money for people who are exploiting the system, like in the way he characterized it, welfare queens, drug addicts, immigrants who come to the state living off of your taxes. He pushed the politics of selfishness. And behind this was an interesting proposition. Reagan basically held, as they still hold today, that there is no such thing as social problems, that society doesn't have problems. The only problems that we see are an accumulation of individual problems. Well, if that's true, then why do you have the pattern of all states going under? Why are urban centers everywhere in the country affected by pretty much the same problems? These are clearly problems that come from society and not from individuals. But Reagan sold the bill of goods, and now people are living out what the politics of selfishness really means. Interestingly enough, every moral system, every religion, every culture recognizes that the highest morality is the support of the group, not putting the individual over the group. This has been recognized ever since people could write things down and before they could write things down, because the highest morality is to guarantee that everybody is wealthy rather than taking individual riches against the group. That's universally been shunned for thousands and thousands of years. But this was sold first in California and across the country as the appropriate moral way to live. And now we're seeing the chickens coming home to roost on that.
California is often viewed as home of the American dream. However, you have many examples which corrode this outlook.
California is, its motto is the Golden State. But behind this is perhaps the greatest polarization of wealth in the entire world. Certainly Schwarzenegger, Uber Roth, Huffington, and just about all of the leading candidates are multimillionaires. Schwarzenegger alone made $50 million in the last 2 years. He's running to be the governor who is supposed to represent all of the people in a state that has the highest percentage of working poor. California has also the highest number of contingency workers. These are people who work from job to job, who don't work 40 hours a week, people who don't have pensions and do not work for a corporation which guarantees them a job for life. California also has the greatest number of people with health care and the most migrant workers who are barred by law from many of the benefits that are provided by government. So Schwarzenegger's solution is that everybody's going to have a really good job and we've got to bring business back to California. Well, I think we've seen already what business offers, and those two things are absolutely in opposition. There's no way that you can do one and do the other at the same time. California is also the state where the microchip was invented, the mythology of Silicon Valley. Really has always been about empire. Behind the myth and the hype, California has been a state where, ever since the robber barons, capitalism ran free and unhindered. Ironically enough, even the state flag, the flag of the Bear Flag Republic, which people have often seen, originally was the flag of slavery. California, like Texas, was originally a quote-unquote republic, which was going to come into the Union and then be divided up into slave states. I mean, Texas it was five and California was three or four, that were then going to outnumber the free states. And that bear flag still represents the dominant power in the state. California is the fourth largest energy producing state after Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. It's the only state without a severance tax. That means that oil companies pump the oil out of the ground and the natural gas and pay $0 for taking this resource away from the state. In California, insurance companies pay no statewide income tax whatsoever. This has been such an outrage that the people have actually forced the state to have an insurance commissioner to somehow regulate these people. But in the last year alone, the insurance companies have increased the premiums for workman's comp on small businesses 400%, which means that California is going to be the first state to really start hammering and ending workman's compensation. It's already being discussed. In 1999, California voters passed the Clean Water Enforcement and Pollution Act. It was never fully implemented. It's supposed to keep pesticides and chemicals, oil, and things like this out of the water. It's never been fully implemented. And because of that, the state loses an estimated $185 million a year in fines that should have been levied that were not. California does have the myth of the youth culture, the beach boys, the surfing, the bikini, the hot rods. It's the state where the youth culture began. At the same time, California jails more people than any other government in the entire world. Remember three strikes and automatic 25 years in jail? That started in California, too. Well, we still have the strongest three strikes law. 60% of the people who are jailed under three strikes have committed nonviolent crimes. It's either violating probation or using drugs. The law was never written for that, but nevertheless, we jail more young people than any other state in the world. California has greater youth poverty than the national average, and the rate of youth poverty is increasing faster than the national average. California has just about the worst schools, certainly the worst schools of any large industrial state. It already, with Prop 13, destroyed the a world-class university system. California now has built 23 jails and only one university in the last 15 years. And interestingly, under the budget cuts that the governor proposed and that the Republicans and Democrats both agreed to, education is being cut across the board, but prisons are not. Only the educational programs in prisons are being cut. California also built a world-class community college system. A lot of this was a response of people understanding that they were being shut out of the universities, and so they wanted a place to go for higher education. Now this is being savaged under the budget and is being cut back across the board. But I think what listeners have to think about is this the California dreaming that everybody thinks about? And is this the California dreaming that you really want? Because what's going on in California, as always, is coming to a state near you.
We seem to be running a little bit out of time, and I was wondering if maybe you could kind of give a little summary and your idea of how people could take action. And
well, first thing that I think we all understand now is that we are living in truly decisive times. The results of what we do in California today and what the American people do around issues like the war and the economy are going to influence what happens in the future for years to come. Capitalists understand this. They have people like Schwarzenegger, Bush, and Clinton, all these politicians who really represent a hidden program. And we articulated some of what that program plays out to be in the discussion of California. But behind this is a pretty united front from the corporate end, which is to really end the old social contract, which existed in the 50s and which people have come to identify with the American dream. And that social contract is under capitalism, that if you work and allow yourself to be exploited and produce for capitalism, then capitalism will take care of you. Well, one thing that everybody can agree on, and one thing that no capitalist would deny, is that capitalism has never taken care of people that it can't exploit. Now we're finding that jobs are being replaced by electronics, robots, and computer programs, and it's creating a large section of people, many of whom have college degrees and vast education and skills, who no longer can find a job. So the question is government going to take care of these people any longer? The old social contract, you had a job if you wanted one, and in the new social program, that's not guaranteed. The result then is what's being fought out in California. Behind the hype and the glitz is an implacable program of capital, which is that government should be all about the business of corporations and nothing about social programs, nothing about spending to benefit the citizens. On the other hand, the people of California have to understand this and recognize that we're really in a fight for the future now, that if we either are going to hold government responsible for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the founding idea of this country, or we're going to let it simply be an agency of increased exploitation, misery, and death, which is what the promise is and what, in fact, is beginning to happen across the country and is what voters in California are so angry about. And the voters here bought Ronald Reagan's message of selfishness. On the other hand, the core values of people in California are the same as core values of people anywhere and across the United States, that they want to live in a society that benefits everybody, that benefits people equally, that takes care of pollution and social decay, that provides decent health care, education, culture, just the abundant life that California has come to mean. Because of that, people in California have passed a number of laws to try to do that, and systematically, every governor, every politician has undercut these laws, worked against them, so that even though they sit on the books in California, this is being undercut because they're just not going to educate people who they feel are not going to have a job. The issue really right now for Californians is, are we going to allow millionaires to come in claiming that they represent all of the people and push a hidden agenda that benefits nothing but corporations and their millionaire buddies? Or are we going to set up a government which engineers a society for the benefit of all?
That is it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. PTR is brought to you by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society, where the millions and billions of dollars going into the pockets of a handful of individuals are shared for the benefit of society as a whole. If you would like other League print and media resources, speakers for your next event, or have questions, please call our 800 number at 1-800-691-6888. That's 1-800-691-6888. Also, you may visit us on the internet at www.lrna.org. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, I want to thank our listeners and stations like KMUD in Redway, California, for supporting PTR. I'm Kenny Shook, and I hope you join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.
We'll be right back.